based on a true scary, contains adult themes, language, and all-around scary shit. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, and welcome to Based on a True Scary. I kind of emphasized the on there, Jake. Did you like that?
I noticed that. That was something new, you know?
Based on a True Scary.
New year, new you. That's nice.
New year, new me. I know it's been a little while since we've actually done this. We announced that we were back with our new season. We did one episode, and then like a month and a half, which is what they say in marketing is good. Right? You like circumvent expectations. You tell people you're going to do something and then don't, and then just disappear for a while. That helps with brand loyalty, I think.
Yes, I believe that's true. Yeah. I read that in a book once.
Right. Over promise, under deliver.
Yeah. Marketing for dummies. I believe I read that in. Yeah.
So we are nailing it, but I would say we are nailing it because this episode, we have a really special guest today. The voice that you just heard there sneaking in, he is a set dresser who has worked on massive hits like Barry, Big Little Lies, Booksmart, Baskets. I purposely chose all of your credits that start with B.
God, seriously.
Do you like that? But wait, I'm not done. My alliteration game is on fire. Most importantly, he's a brand new daddy. Welcome, Alex Gable.
Hi. Thanks for having me, guys.
Welcome.
That was very nice. Very nice introduction.
I even round of applause for you.
Yeah, that's never happened in my whole life.
Gable was actually our first guest, and we were so bad at recording. And by me was so bad at recording that it was almost unlistenable. To me, it was. But for some reason, that was probably the one that had the most plays.
At the time, yeah.
It was crazy.
I blame myself for both those things, the most plays and you getting rid of it. So.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, we had to, if you're an original listener, you guys are familiar with Gable. So we brought him back for, you know, the requests were pouring in.
Yeah, so. It was nonstop. Yep.
Yeah.
I bet. Well, thanks for having me, guys. I'm glad to be back.
Yes, thank you for coming for such a great film today. We have we're doing Silent House, the 2011 film. So I'll run through the details. Everyone's favorite part, I'm sure. This movie was directed by Chris Kentis, who actually did Open Water, our last episode.
Oh, no way.
Same director, totally different movie. And it was also directed by Laura Lau, written by Laura Lau, though it is a remake of a Uruguayan film called La Casa Muda, which I took French in high school, but I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that that means the silent house in Spanish. Yeah. Right?
Probably.
Can we confirm?
I would assume.
Confirmed.
Great. Love it. Budget for this was $2 million. It grossed $12.8 million at the box office. Rotten Tomatoes gives it a critic rating of 43%. Audience, a good old 30% score. Metacritic, 49. Rated R, 1 hour and 28 minutes. And the truth claim for this is like kind of all marketing. The poster, the trailer say inspired by true events. But there was something about it in the intro to the film. So yeah, guys, I went into this movie blind. Like, I didn't watch the trailer. I knew it was the whole Elizabeth Olsen, like, I knew the gimmick was that it was filmed in real time and it's all one shot. But I thought it was a home invasion movie. Like, I didn't know.
Yeah. It's what any movie with the word house in it, you kind of are thinking, well, either ghost or a home invasion. So.
I did see it already. I've seen it, but like back, I think in 2012, and then I actually watched the original first.
This is
when I didn't have a job, so I'm not like a fancy like I watch foreign films. No, I just had nothing else to do. So I was kind of expecting it because it's also all one shot, and I also love all one shot movies. I did not, from what I remember back then, I didn't know what I was expecting.
Okay.
Yeah. But it definitely, when I watched it again, I forgot this whole thing. I mean, I won't ruin anything, but I was just like, oh, fuck, I don't remember any of this.
Well, we can ruin it because I have to give the synopsis for those listeners that didn't see the movie. So I'm going to have to ruin it. So for those of you who didn't see it, I'll give you, by the way, I listened to the Scrubs podcast. Do you guys listen to that at all?
I have not listened to the Scrubs podcast.
I highly recommend it. I'm not getting paid by them. I wish I was. We should do a mashup. Zach Donald, if you're listening, hit me up. But they do like a 30-second recap of the episode before they talk about it. So that's my new inspiration for these synopsis readings, though mine are like 10 seconds long. So,
all right, let's hear it.
Bear with me. But this movie, so a young woman, her dad, and her uncle return to their family lake house to fix it up after years of disrepair and break-ins. They're seemingly attacked by intruders, but in a high-tension ripoff twist, it's revealed that the young woman has actually been attacking her dad and her uncle the whole time because they used to sexually abuse her at the lake house, and returning has jogged her memory.
Wow.
So that's the movie.
I didn't think, I never, High Tension's probably one of my favorite films. I never thought it as a ripoff, but.
Oh, no, I'm saying this film ripped off
High Tension. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm like, now I think about it, yeah, that's kind of, I mean, I guess it's not an original idea that someone else is, they think someone else is.
The killer is you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. This is always, these ones are always weird. Whenever it comes to children and
so abuse. I feel you could make a good horror movie about someone with a dissociative personality disorder, but it wasn't this movie.
Because
it's kind of gimmicky, right? The one shot conceit the whole time. And it doesn't pay. The payoff is kind of like, oh, that's the ending.
Okay, I did think about this.
Build to that.
And I want to ask Trisha's opinion, because you and I, Gable and I, both work in film. So I caught myself spending a lot of time going, oh, look, in the beginning, they're holding lanterns instead of flashlights so they can light themselves, right?
Yeah.
Now, did you have that experience, Trisha? Or like, what did you think of the one shot?
I was constantly trying to figure out when they cheated it. Mm-hmm. That was kind of my whole thing, because like, look, I know I'm not cool and work in the industry, right? But
yeah, you are.
But if I'm going to humble brag, I have a boyfriend.
Oh, that's
and
true.
He works in the industry.
That's true.
So it's top of mind. But yeah, that was my whole thing, is that I was super distracted by being like, okay, when did they cut? When did they fake it? But I wasn't thinking about lighting. I will admit that's never where my mind goes.
Well, and I mean, that was one of many things I thought of. And I kept thinking about how it all being one shot, like you were saying, Gable, it didn't really help. Like, there was no payoff to it.
So every movie is you're watching a series of decisions, camera decisions, editing decisions, lighting decisions. And in a movie where you're meant to think it's just one shot the whole time, you are forced to think about that a lot more, because every frame you're just considering, oh, how'd they get away with this? Where's the camera going?
Right.
How are they doing this? And so there has to be a really good reason to do the movie in that way. Mm-hmm. And I don't think this movie had that reason. This movie felt more like along the lines of, I have a cool idea. Let's do a whole horror movie in real time in one take. And someone said, great. Okay, now write the story around that, because I don't think this story needs that type of. Well, so that's why I'm more confused. I didn't know it was a remake before I sat down.
That sort of supports your theory that they were like, actually, we don't even have to write it. There's already a movie that exists.
Yeah.
That's in real time.
Yeah.
So we'll just completely rip it off.
That's weird. I don't understand the decision, but there you go.
I mean, should we talk about the main concern is how did they incorporate her boobs the entire time?
Oh my God.
Yeah. There clearly was a conversation where someone asked the question, does Elizabeth Olsen need to be wearing a shirt in this movie? And someone said yes, and someone said no. And the third party said, let's compromise.
I have so many notes about like the strategic placement of her boobs in that tank top and like the camera angles and everything. She's, how old is she in this movie?
She's 20.
Okay.
Well, so I looked this up because, by the way, I'm so glad you said something about this, Trisha, because I'm like, am I just an old creep now? Yeah. Like I was just like, I was like, I can't stop noticing that. You know, I was just like, it's there. Right.
And they were there.
But when I looked it up, she had just turned 21. So depending on when they filmed it, when it released, she's somewhere between 19 and 21. So,
see, it's a series of choices. They made a lot of choices with where the camera frame was going to be.
We can agree that the 2 million, I know she wasn't a big name at the time, but her sisters were.
Right.
So I'm assuming a good section went to her. And then no money went to any other actor. Because what did you guys think of those guys?
They weren't the best. But they weren't served great by the story. This movie mostly falls apart whenever anyone has to talk to each other.
Right, Because
the dialogue's very, very...
Well, it felt like...
They feel like auditions where, you know, you'd walk away and think, that guy doesn't really seem like her dad.
Yeah, or it's
like a family friend.
It's like they gave them no background. They were just like, okay, you diddled your daughter back then. Mm-hmm. Somehow, or for the uncle. Like, the uncle was so creepy. And I'm just like, that was his only direction. You used to be a creep. Go with it. Ooh, I haven't seen you in a while, babe. What's going on? You know?
They use that to subvert you, because then at the end, he's kind of the apologetic one.
Yep.
So it's a complete just, you know, misdirection. And that's another thing, you know, this story is not served well by the fact that it has to take place in real time because of their gimmick with the camera thing, because you have to find out everything about all these people that matters to you in an hour and a half.
Right.
The times where she's like, what's that? And they rush, like, oh, it's nothing, don't worry about it, it's just some trash.
Oh man, I was really laughing the first time the dad did that, when she goes upstairs and is going, dad, daddy, and you hear him in the background going, it's nothing, I'm just in here, like, basically like, leave me alone. And you're like,
oh god,
yeah,
that's also meant you have to believe that this house that has been I didn't think about this till right now, this house that has been broken into and vandalized for years had all this evidence in it that
one took the creepy Polaroids
that were just sitting out on the bed open. Also, the box wasn't locked earlier in the film when she stumbles upon the photo.
Well, there's a couple of garbage bags filled with stuff. I don't know, and they were all nervous about it. So, like how many Polaroids are you taking?
Why are you
just leaving it at this empty house?
Yeah, I mean, how many times in your life have you seen someone pick something up and go, oh my God. And then when you ask them what it is, they say, it's just trash. And then you believe them. You know,
that old conversation you've had.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, most of my early notes are just crap because, I mean, all I was doing was talking about how creepy the dad and the uncle were.
Yeah.
Because again, I didn't know the twist at the end, which... I mean, I don't know if that's good or bad on them that they just made it so ridiculously blatant, but...
The twist is frustrating because I think there could be a good movie about someone suffering from psychosis and a disorder like that, but instead it just feels like, well, this movie needs an ending. Mm-hmm. And you could have grafted a lot of different endings into the last 15 minutes of this movie. And I think they would have paid off pretty much exactly the same. As
you almost have to wonder if they considered different endings and then they just threw this in there at the end. Like, why was her inner monologue some random girl named Sophia? Why?
What was that?
We gotta get another actress in this movie somehow.
Maybe that was like the director's girlfriend.
I will say that was probably my favorite scene when they first met, and she just clearly didn't know who she was.
Oh yeah.
And you know, and I was just kind of like, what? Like, I was like, something's going to pay off here. Something's going to happen with this. And I actually was hoping, I'm like, maybe they both were being abused. Mm-hmm. And she finally came in and like she, and no.
Nope. You're not going to get that.
Yeah.
Satisfaction, Jake.
No, that's ridiculous. I apologize. Yeah.
Why would you expect anything like that?
It is strange though, because there are kind of two halves to the movie. That the first half is her going through the house, calling out to her dad. And the second half is of the movie is her going through the house, calling out for her Uncle Peter.
Right.
And I think when it just turned into the second part where they're just going through the house again, she's going through the house with another older male relative, is when I realized that I don't think they had a lot to work with here.
Yeah.
This could have been a good Twilight Zone episode that you may have never talked about again after watching it the first time.
Yeah.
But it's a 90-minute movie shouldn't feel that stretched.
Yeah. It was all shot on like a Canon 5D, right? Just like normal, a photo camera. Oh, and yeah. $2 million? What are you spending that money on?
I don't know.
See, I don't know, Jake, because I don't know how much money went to Elizabeth Olsen, because she, like, Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene, I think came out, I think, the same year. Mm-hmm. So I don't even know if she had.
Just for our listeners, she actually, you could see her boobies in that movie. So.
Oh.
Yeah.
Really crucial.
But yeah. Just kind of put it out there.
Yeah. So I guess we'll hope it came out after.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to watch the movie because it doesn't look good, but,
what I will say about that movie and what I will say about this is that Elizabeth Olsen does a good job. Yeah. Like, she did well in this, I thought, considering what she was given and her actor.
There was just,
yeah, she's a good actress.
With the whole Warner thing, there was just so much. There's so many times where, like, in the beginning, she's like walking from the lake to the thing, and they spend 3 minutes on her, and she's like touching the leaves and blah blah blah. I'm like, what's going on here?
Yeah,
like the just trying to fill time.
Is a really cool shot, but
the overhead is
pretty cool. Yeah, good job. That was good.
See, it's nice to say nice things sometimes.
It is. I also liked the part where she was illuminating parts of the room with the Polaroid camera.
Neat.
That was.
That's always a fun gimmick.
That's a. They did that in the original.
Did they?
Okay. Yeah.
So if you can steal something from Rear Window, that's a good thing to steal from Rear Window.
Right.
But another gimmick movie that actually has a reason for being the way that it is, but
love Rear Window. Should we just stop watching shitty horror movies, Jake, and have a Hitchcock podcast instead?
Maybe.
No.
We're doing this is important. I mean
we're committed. We're definitely all over the place when it comes to movies.
It's true.
Yeah.
I will, in other compliments, I will say that the scene where she hides under the table the first time, like right when she is realizing that something naughty is going down, right? And there's the legs that are walking and then she gets grabbed. I thought that was a tense moment. I thought that was super spooky. I will say she panicked. Did you guys think that she panicked really quickly the second she found out the door wouldn't open?
Yes.
Oh, she was quick. She panicked too quick.
Right.
I thought I missed something.
Yeah.
Which was weird because you kind of don't. The one benefit to make it look like one shot is you do watch the whole thing. You don't. You don't get distracted easily. But I got bored somewhat easily. But yeah, I felt like she kind of lost it very quickly, which I guess based on the ending makes sense.
Yeah.
But watching it initially, it's distracting because it seems wrong.
There's that line from her dad where he goes, she's like, I heard something upstairs. And he's like, I know how you are. I think that was supposed to solve that situation.
That's true. That she like, she's jumpy.
Yeah. She keeps asking him not to leave her alone and they keep leaving her alone. So,
it's anytime someone's trapped in a house, if there's not a good reason for the person to be trapped in a house, it's very distracting because it feels like you could just get out of the house and not be in the house anymore. And then, of course, she does get out of the house and then immediately goes back into the house.
Yeah. That was probably the best thing they did, was explain that it was an abandoned house. And that helped explain why it was all locked up.
Yeah. And windows boarded, which, you know, a fantastic setting for a horror film, you got to admit. So even when it's daytime, spooky on the inside.
Yes.
Just like me. Yes.
But you're a boarded up window?
Cute on the outside, spooky on the inside.
Oh, man.
Should I make that my like LinkedIn tagline?
Yeah, that's going to help you.
100%.
Sure. Yeah.
Oh, I'm looking for work. If any, no, I'm kidding. Just kidding. Love my job. What else do I have here? Oh, as I'm looking through my notes, it's like none of these are relevant, because for a while I legit thought it was a ghost movie. Like,
So many of my notes, I barely took any, because I kind of knew the ending. I knew something, there was a twist. I'm kind of like, you know, I pointed out right away that, like, oh, the uncle's creepy. And I'm like, at the end, I'm like, oh, that's right, he is creepy.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. When she started hallucinating the toilet of blood on the wall, like, it got pretty shining there for a few minutes, where
that
she
bugged me a little bit.
Ghosts down hallways. And I was watching that sequence and I was thinking, oh boy, I wish this was paying off in a better movie, because this is possibly kind of cool. But now I just don't really know what's going on actually at all.
Right.
So, yeah.
It felt like a really heavy-handed period womanhood metaphor, though, that I was just like, okay, guys, come on.
Yes.
But I enjoyed the moldy walls. I thought that was kind of fun.
Can someone explain to me what the moldy walls actually,
what like, it means?
What did those...
So when women get their period, they're moldy.
This is part of the...
can confirm.
Gotcha. Everything else I got, the bottles rolled.
Oh, I think the mold was just...
Mold's just mold, and...
I think you're right. I guess there is no point to...
What could it be that, like, the foundation is crumbling around her and she's starting to, like, break out and realize what's happening? Should we consult, like, a film...
Or was it, of her mind is eroding.
Was it just a reason to get the father and uncle talking and get the uncle out of there?
Probably.
Yeah.
Because they probably realized they'd come up with an idea for a movie where the camera never obviously cuts and they needed to get someone out of the frame at some point without time jumping.
Solve that mystery.
Yeah, there was a scene where she looks up and the ceiling, it's all turning to mold. And I was watching going, oh, the mold. And then as I was thinking that, also realizing, but I don't think the mold means anything. So, okay.
Oh, weird. So this sounds really dumb, but I watched this on Hulu and I played it on the TV through AirPlay and it was really dark. Like, it was extra dark.
So you didn't see the mold.
The mold. Okay, that makes sense. Okay.
Period metaphor imagery. She runs out and all of the walls are covered in mold.
I'm so glad I'm never going to run for office, because if I do, this podcast is going to fucking screw me.
Don't ever run for office.
More genuine.
Yeah, that's true.
I will share my opinions on my podcast. Okay?
He speaks what he thinks. I know someone who got elected like that. Anyways, moving on.
We don't pay for sound effects. Trisha just does them all.
That wasn't with a her drop. Mouth. No one hit a button to do
that? There's no button there. Wow. That was all. Yeah.
I'm impressed.
I'm like the guy from, oh God, I'm going to fuck up this reference. Like Police Academy. What's the guy?
Yeah.
Going the right way.
All right, I dropped it.
Well, that was terrible. You should have really ended that with like a good sound effect.
Yeah, but I can't do.
Just got one sound effect, but it was good.
Yeah, exactly. I've been had. No. Yeah.
Should we move on?
I mean, is there anything else? This is going to be a super short episode. Do we have anything else that we could talk about here?
I think I want to say I think horror movies are weird when they fall into this niche where they're not obviously bad and they aren't really kind of mind-bending classics, because it's hard to make fun of them outright. Like if this movie had been made 30 years ago, it would have been a joke, right? Because horror movies have the production value to be they always feel like they're better than they are a lot of the time.
Right.
Clearly has people worked on this movie who could clearly make a good movie, but they didn't bother to, maybe because they just didn't want to write one and they were too in love with their idea for the single shot thing. Hey, if you're going to remake a movie that's already a gimmick, you should do something. I don't know how different it is from the Uruguayan one. But,
yeah, Jake, I mean, it literally says a remake. So I'm assuming, do you remember, it's pretty much shot for shot for the most part.
Well,
right?
I mean, we're talking about a wonder. Yes, it's shot for shot. But
weird.
It is. It's different. There's little things that are different about it. There's obviously like the Polaroid camera is a thing that like happens in it. But I forgot exactly what happened. I reread what happened in it. There's just like things like there's, you know, she flees a room and discovers many photos on a wall in a baby buggy, you know, and there's a groundskeeper, and the groundskeeper is the one that's kind of helping out with the diddling, as we call it.
The groundskeeper's uncle. She's in on it. Okay.
Yeah. It's confusing. I mean, I don't quote me on that, but I probably should reread this when I did it. But I mean, I barely remember what happened yesterday. So.
There we go. Yeah, Jake's not a reliable witness.
Yeah.
I will say that I think that the original is considered to be a good film, evidenced by the fact that so Chris Kentis and Laura Lau, they're not still working. They basically did like a short, they did Open Water, they did this movie, and then nothing.
Nothing?
Oh, nothing afterwards. Both of them.
Open Water is also like a concept horror movie.
Yeah, they have a lot of ideas, these two. I believe Laura Lau produced and maybe assisted on the screenplay for Open Water as well. So they're almost like the CMOs of like, or CEOs of the film industry, where they're just like, we got ideas. And they're like, we don't want a creative team to make it. So then they just do it themselves. But, and well, it goes terribly awry.
Open Water grossed 58 million and the budget was 120,000.
Yes, we can go ahead and say that it was a sleeper hit.
They're just kind of riding on this, you know.
They're riding on that.
Do you know what the numbers are for the Uruguayan one? Because I'm just like, America remakes so many other countries' horror movies, and the only reason to do it seems to always be we just want American audiences to watch it. So I understand from a financial perspective why you would remake this movie, but it seems real weird to remake a total gimmick movie.
Yeah. I mean, I know the budget for the original one was $6,000. So like it was literally made for pennies. Yes.
Really?
$6,000. I think it was actually considered, I think it did well there. I'm not finding immediately information on the, it's tough for like international box office to see.
Yeah. Wait, what so I'd be interested to watch the original because that's not a lot of money and it's hard to make any movie for that much money. I'd be really interested to see someone trying to pull off this gimmick with that money.
Right.
That's interesting. Yeah. Okay.
Well, explain, I went down a dark path, not dark path, but I went down a path last night, like just researching, not if it's based on a true story, but just about this movie and the original movie. And the number of screens in that country is 61. So there's 61 theaters.
Wow.
And I went down a list of films from there. And honestly, let's see, in between 2010s, 8 movies were made.
Wow. That's why it did so well.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
61. Wow.
That's incredible. So struggling filmmakers, go to Uruguay and release your film.
Yep.
And chances are it'll be in the top 10.
Have it remade by an American studio.
Just maybe not, don't involve Chris Kentis and Laura Lau. They do not have the most excellent track record. Sorry. They're avid listeners. So.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Oh, no. We're alienating our fans.
All right.
Yeah. Guys. Anything else that we need to...
Were you guys scared watching this movie at all?
No, but I have no feelings, so that's
I
bad.
I know that you guys are seasoned horror people.
I still get scared. It's just that. Sure. There was a lot of holy shit moments, but, but overall, yeah, I pretty much wasn't.
It just. That,
oh, go ahead.
I just think horror movies need to, I'll still get afraid watching The Shining because of the feeling of isolation. And same with the Blair Witch sometimes. And
love those Blair-ish.
Are like Blair Witch is another like low budget, concept thing, but it is terrifying because when you find, like, I remember after seeing that movie saying, I'm not really that afraid of it, but then you would go camping and then I would realize, ooh, I have to live that statement for this camping trip because I actually now I'm starting to get kind of freaked out being in the woods. And this movie didn't really generate any kind of, I was only watching it to see how they kept up the one shot thing going really after a certain point. So it didn't generate any kind of inner turmoil or what's going to happen or what's this all about. So I think that's ultimately why it wasn't that interesting to me. But I'd be interested in watching the original just because of that budget revelation.
It's going to be impressive that they did anything for that much money, honestly. So, I would think so.
I think this, from what I remember from it, it was shot in the same camera. So they probably just didn't have the smarts to, like, how do we make it look good? The sound probably sucks. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, it's probably all that, but. Hey, I respect anyone who can make a movie for $6,000.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah, true that.
That inspired an American remake? I mean,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, that director is still working. He's still doing stuff. Gustavo. We will learn about Gustavo in a little bit here.
Okay.
But yeah, I guess... we can move on to the question and answer portion here if you gentlemen are ready. So Alex, the first time Alex was on the podcast, we were not doing our new format, which is where Jake doesn't do any research because he's a lazy piece of shit. Just kidding. Because it's more fun.
There was a little bit of truth there, but you know what?
I'm excited.
It's cool. I'm a massive control freak. So
yeah, I mean,
happy to.
Let's be honest. You were never going to let me do any research.
Oh, God, no.
It wasn't all the way around. Everyone wins.
Everyone's happy. So you can kind of, in a way, go head to head with Jake if you want, Gable. You know, we can make this a competition, pit you guys against each other to see who can answer correctly.
I'm excited.
Which is fun. All right.
Yeah, so. I think I lose all the time. So,
like, keep score. Do you keep score?
I keep score. Yeah.
I'm here to turn it around for you.
Yeah.
You'd be surprised. All right, gentlemen. Question one. We're going to start broad here. Of course, so one thing to note about this is that we obviously kind of just have to start from the ending of the film because most of it takes place in everyone's head, right? Or in Laura's head.
Right.
So, starting off, do you guys think that in real life, a young woman killed her father and injured her uncle at a lake house?
Oh, man. I'm going to say no.
I'm going to say yes, but, well, are there caveats? I just think
this is too detailed. This is okay.
I mean, you can caveat it. You can caveat it if you want. Yeah.
I'll go with a hard yes, but it sounds like something that would be far-fetched for someone to have said, I'm going to specifically make a movie out of this story.
Right. Like,
this is what happened. I'll say yes. I say yes.
Well, if I'm being honest here, I don't even know who to give this point to. I'm going to, I guess, sort of give it to Gable because the answer is it is maybe kind of true. Let me elaborate. So, as I said before, this movie is a remake of La Casa Muda from Uruguay. The director of that film, Gustavo Hernandez, claims that it is based on a true story. And in an interview, he said the following quote. The film is inspired by a murder from the 1940s in which two mutilated bodies were found inside of a country home. Based on that event, we reconstructed the possible last 80 minutes before the murders. Now, in my hours of research over the past 2 days. I could not find any historical evidence to validate that claim. But I did find a little bit more on his story that we can explore in further questions. And additionally, I found an essay from the University of Glasgow stating that Gustavo later admitted that the story was also sort of inspired by like multiple unsolved murders from the 1940s in the Uruguayan countryside, as well as kind of a mix of like more contemporary events in the country and across Latin America in general, like a rise in house break-ins and kidnappings, and then also this growth of like security culture in homes. But I mean, ultimately, I'm going to have to hard claim bullshit on this one in general. Guys, sorry.
Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah. It's weird because ultimately at the end of the movie, the idea is there's nothing supernatural going on. So could someone with a personality disorder like that murder two people? Yeah, probably. Yeah. So
sure. Yeah. And I mean, as Jake knows and our listeners know, sometimes when we get into these types of situations, there's still some sort of story that it's based on that I can find like actual documented information on. But with this one, nothing. I did find some crazy murders that happened in Uruguay, like in the 1940s. Some shit went down. Yeah. Yeah. But don't worry. The show must go on. I have more questions for you guys. Don't worry. Yep. We have more details, so of the story at least. So question number two. We now know that, you know, there was a house where people were murdered, right? In the film, they go to the lake house because they're fixing it up and they haven't been there for a while. Do you guys think that in real life, they were fixing up this country house and that's why they were there?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
I'm going to say no, because I feel like that would have been something pretty easy to determine.
It was actually true.
No!
Jake. So, again, you know, we got to say, according to the director, in 1944, somewhere in a small village in Uruguay, a father, his daughter, and his daughter traveled to their remote second country house. They met the dad's brother there, who was there to help them with the construction because they were going to fix up the house. So the night before the renovation started, they all decided to stay at the house so that they could start super early in the morning. And that is the night when apparently all the shit went down. So it's true.
Damn.
According to the director.
So is that Jake 1, me 1, or Jake 2, me 0?
I think it's 1 and 1.
Mm, okay. I put 2 and 2 down, but I guess I'll, you know.
Okay, we'll get, I guess,
two,
yeah, two. We'll do.
No, I mean 0 and 2. That's what I meant. But, you know, I'll give you the 1. You're a new daddy. I'll give you this.
Oh, yeah. That's very kind of
yeah.
you.
Yeah. Remember
the
this.
Daddy points. Oh, unfortunately, you only have 1 more question.
Oh, okay. Shit. Wow.
And it's a tough one. So
I'll get
do
it right.
You guys think that they ended up solving this murder and that it was the daughter who killed these two men?
Oh, shit.
So it's kind of, you know, if these are true, then we're going based on the director telling the truth. But if they're all false, it's just because he was lying.
That is right. Correct.
Yeah.
I want to say that I'm going to say false.
Okay. Because I already preemptively answered and I agree with Jake on this one, I'm going to go with false okay. as well.
So it's half true and half false, I guess.
Ooh.
So does that mean you guys get a half a point? So ultimately, I have a quote from Gustavo saying that the disturbing photographs were the key to solving the bloody crimes, which seems to insinuate that the crime was at least solved. However, nowhere does he say that it was the daughter that murdered them. So again, like, I just kind of think it's all bullshit. And like, I'll say this again, no information can be found to authenticate any of Gustavo's aforementioned claims. So I think maybe we call this one a hard false. Okay. Because it's all bullshit. We need like a bullshit-o-meter or like a sticker that we put on
yeah,
movie cover
rubber stamp it.
No, this, like, I guess this one, the truth rating is just, there's an asterisk next to it.
That just says no truth.
Yeah. Yeah, there's.
I mean, I hate to say it.
Yeah, the hard part is because it could be made up, but it's not as though he made up a ghost killed them. It's he made up something that is completely plausible if he did make it up, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's a tough one.
It's tough. I know. It's almost just like the issue is in the judging.
Yeah.
But, you know, the truth hurts sometimes. And I was honestly tempted to make shit up just to make you guys and our listeners happy. Oh. Like, I would allow myself to suffer knowing the truth of the situation, but I would just want to spread joy to others. But yeah, I stuck to my guns and I provided the most accurate data. I'm doing God's work, you guys.
Good for you, because you know what? This is the whole point of the podcast, right? We review movies that are inspired or based, and you know what? I literally wanted to know how true this was.
And it's arguably not, or Gustavo Hernandez is just he's just a big liar, or he kind of heard something somewhere that like the internet refuses to authenticate, is kind of where I'm at.
Yeah. Have you found, like, he really has to be your next guest, right? Because you've got to grill him on this or something.
Oh,
you're
yeah.
tracking down. That's the only part of your research you didn't complete.
I know.
Is there a history of him being really adamant about this story being true? Or is he more in like a Herzog world of like, who cares? It's the story that matters. Or
from the interviews that I watched and I read, it seems more of the latter. Like I really think that they leaned heavily into, because the original is the same sort of gimmick where like it happens all in real time. And that was sort of the big push, was like they threw in the based on a true story almost just as a gimmick. And then they like on top of their other gimmick, which was, and you get to experience all of the terror in real time.
Okay, yeah.
So it feels like an insult to the based on a true story genre, if you will, that he even wanted to include it.
Right, because it was all part of the marketing. So he had to have gotten up every day and just said to himself, remember, it's like not a lie if I believe it, or something along those lines.
That's what I do about a lot of things in my life.
Every day? Yeah.
You're doing fine. And remember, it's not a lie if you believe it. Well, I know this was an interesting one, Gable. I'm sorry that we had you on such a crazy one. When I picked Silent House for you, I was like, home invasion. It definitely happened. I'll have like lots of information to go off of.
Well, I mean, no, not at all. It's a unique thing, right? Because not a lot of story happens. So you're breaking down kind of this sort of, I don't know, this strange mixture of, did this really happen? Or is this kind of almost a living marketing gimmick of a movie?
Right.
I mean, is there much behind the, it's one shot? And I don't know. I think the movie is kind of some of its parts, which is not a lot. It feels like an audition for someone. The movie feels like an audition by the filmmakers to show someone that they could make a better movie.
Yeah, well said. I totally agree. And yet it was like their second feature film.
I guess it wasn't a good audition, which is a bummer. It's a bummer.
Those happen.
Poor guys. Well,
so we usually, at the end of the episodes now, we usually rate like 1 through 10 out of 10, how accurately we think that the movie portrayed the real story that you would have learned through the questions. But I mean, I don't know, is that even applicable here? Because like ultimately none of it was really true.
Yeah, on a scale of 1 through 10, it's like a C- or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah,
doesn't really make any sense.
C-. I'll take C-.
C-?
yeah.
I mean,
sounds right.
We even give it like a 0.5? I mean, I don't know. If it's based on a lie, then, and there is no truth.
We're on a bell curve right here, so.
Oh, this is such a conundrum.
I guess if he's telling the truth, so if Jake wins the point round and Gustavo's telling the truth, now I'm confusing myself, then it's like an 8. But if he's not, then it's then it's also an 8 because he made it up anyway.
It's a pass fail. It's a pass fail.
Yeah, it's a pass fail.
It's a pass fail.
Yeah.
Exactly. If we recorded a podcast and no one hears it, did we record it? Is that is that where we're going?
Okay.
Oh God. Well, Gabe, we reserve the end for our guests to plug anything that they would like to promote or plug that's happening in their life that they want to encourage people to do. Is there anything that you want to say to all of these fine folks listening right now?
Wow. Plug. I don't really create anything plug worthy.
To clarify. Yeah. You create a good time, Gable. Okay.
Oh, that's nice. I don't know where to plug that.
For a good time call. What is this, an 80s song?
For a good time, get back in touch with me when I have taken the vaccine. I would say, I guess I could plug all those shows you rattled off, because incidentally you rattled off all the B shows that I worked on, and I also immensely enjoyed working on all of those. And those shows all deserve everyone's viewership. Baskets Berry, Book Smart, the other one you said, Big Little Lies.
Yeah. All amazing.
Yeah. And people films. Have plenty of time to, you know, watch all the TV they possibly can right now. Right. It's time to catch up on that.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I would say too, okay, I'll plug something I had nothing to do with. Sam has a favorite TV show. That's my son. And it's Halt and Catch Fire, which is a show that nobody ever watched.
Oh, my God.
And I'm just saying it because he's obsessed with the intro music. And it's,
that's adorable.
My one dad anecdote for the podcast. So
that is so cute. Do you just play it on repeat? Do you go to YouTube and just Google Halt and Catch Fire intro song? And then
it's on my phone. If he's ever upset, just play it and he calms down.
Oh, I've never heard that. Funny. Jake, we have to put that as the outro music for this episode. Can you?
Yep.
Will we get majorly sued? I think we will. Well, that is so precious. On this lovely Sammy note here, thank you guys. Nice. Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Jake, for coming again and
showing up. Episode. Showing up.
Thanks.
Yep.
Thank you so much, Gable, for also doing another episode. We're so glad to have you back. You're a great guest, and great we love seeing you.
Jake, did I get you ahead in the point scoring now?
Yeah.
Have one in the...
Well, I mean, technically I'm winning by one, but, you know, our point scoring is a little iffy. You know, there's a lot of half points. There's a lot of times technically you're wrong, but technically you're right. So,
yeah, on that bell curve.
Yeah. Like, let's just go ahead and just say that we both won in life.
Yeah. I'm a terrible enforcer. So whatever you guys think is right. I'm like the super hippy dippy elementary school teacher. Like, if you think it's right, it's right.
Exactly.
Congratulations. A+.
Believe in yourself.
Believe the lie. But yes. And also thank you to our listeners. We're back. We promise we will try to do this on a more regular cadence. Believe us. We'll do it. Things are heading in a better direction. Maybe we'll be in more positive moods. But yeah, thanks again for listening. And we'll be back soon.
Later.
Bye.